Let's do a quick chazar from last week. A chazar for some people, new for others. So we talked about how, well, so far, you know, in the whole thing, we've talked about how to avoid making everything treif. Let's be honest. We all have that drawer of treif things that we have to now fix. So the question is, how do we kasher them, and can they be kashered, right? So last week, we said that there's a concept of kabolo kachpolto. The same way the taste goes in is the same way it comes out, right? So if taste goes in through boiling, through hagala, if I had anything on the stove with a water medium or even with oil, so the way it went in was through water, so I have to remove it through water, which means boiling it out. And the other option is if it went in through a heat medium like direct heat, like over the fire, a grill, a pan without any oil, excuse me. So the way to get that out is kabola kapolto. The same way it went in through a medium of heat and no water and no oil is the same way it's going to come out. Kabola kapolto, the same way it goes in, the same way it comes out. And we said that essentially there are three levels, right? There's the top level of kashering, and that's called libun gamor. So libun gamor is incineration. It's where you take something and put it in the oven, or, well, the oven's not going to work except for on self-clean. It's where you take a blowtorch or something like that. You heat up the metal or the item until it's glowing red hot. That's probably about 900 degrees Fahrenheit, something like that. You will not reach that in your regular oven except for maybe on self-clean. Right? So that's the way to do libun kal. And what libun kal does is it incinerates any taste that's there. It doesn't pull it out, right? It doesn't pull it out. It literally burns and destroys it, which is why you could technically, if you were doing libun gamor on something, the top incineration, you wouldn't have to clean the thing. You wouldn't have to wait 24 hours to do it. You could kasher it right then and there because it incinerates anything that's there. Most likely the actual kli that you're trying to clean. So it's almost always impractical to do a libun gamor. I'm trying to think. My friend went to, I forget where he was, India. I don't know. He's a Chabad shliach. So he went somewhere for Pesach in the middle of nowhere where, you know, you think that there aren't any Jews. And then it turns out there's 500 Israelis there. So he went and, you know, they had a blowtorch. But to actually properly kasher something with a blowtorch means you have to hold on every single spot for however long it takes to get that small spot glowing red, and then move on, and then move on. It's not practical. Very, very rarely do we do it. The next level is libun kal, which is it's also incineration, it's burning, but it doesn't work the same way libun gamor works. Since it's not as strong, it's probably about 550 degrees an hour ovens for an hour. Since it's not as strong, it doesn't incinerate, it just pulls out the taste. Obviously, if you have any real food on it, it burns the food. But it's not as strong as libun gamor. So whenever you need libun gamor, the next level doesn't work. And then the third level is hagala. And we're going to use all these practically about specific cookware and specific appliances in the kitchen. But the lowest level, not the lowest, but the next level is hagala. And that is where you boil something, right? You have a spoon, you trafed up through, I don't know, mixing the wrong coffee cup, or you had it in the wrong pot, or you used the pot with the wrong food. So those were used through a medium of water or oil or some liquid. And those, the way you get the taste out is by boiling it, and it pulls the taste out. It doesn't destroy the taste. So when it comes to hagala, you have to wait 24 hours since the last use. Because if I don't wait 24 hours, what's going to happen? I have my cup. It's very hard to bring props for this type of shear. I could bring all my pots in my entire kitchen and demonstrate, but that, you know, if you can bring that. So the way it works is if I'm trying to kosher this cup and it hasn't been 24 hours, that means taste can come out and taste can go in. So that's nice. I dunk into the boiling water, but that means the taste goes out into the water and comes right back in. So if that taste is still good within 24 hours, maybe I didn't accomplish anything. So that's why when it comes to hagala, where I'm trying to pull out the taste through the water, you have to wait 24 hours since the last use, and the thing has to be clean because boiling water doesn't, well, burn off any actual physical residue, right? So again, the three levels, hagala, pulling out the taste, that's the boiling in water, and it has to be clean, and it can't have been used in 24 hours, right? It just pulls out the taste, and we don't want the pulled out taste to go right back in. The next level is libun kal, which is this quasi hagala because it pulls out taste, but it's also kind of like libun gamor because it incinerates actual, you know, physical residue. And the top level is Liban Gomer, which totally incinerates everything, incinerates residue, incinerates taste, and I don't have to wait 24 hours because, well, burns it all away right then and there. Okay, so that was basically what we did. It's the basic three levels. Anytime I need to do a lower level one, like Hagala, Liban Kal, I can always use a higher one. It just might not survive, right? If something needs Hagala, and I'm going to do Liban Gomer, halakhically it'll work, but good luck to the spoon, right? It might melt right then and there. It's not, you know, not practical. Halakhically it'll work. Okay, so that's where we got until now. We'll use those if that was confusing. So obviously you can always ask questions. We'll also use we'll use those concepts and apply them to a number of appliances by the end, okay? All right, so let's start with a few questions. Number one, someone used my meat crock pot to cook dairy. Is there any way to turn it back to meat? Okay, so I was trying to think what a person would cook dairy in a crock pot. Beyond me, can't figure that one out. But you did. Is there any way to kosher it? Okay, so what would you say? Right, so far the rule is Kabbalah Kachpolta, the same way it goes in is the same way it comes out. Usually crock pots have some liquid medium in there. So does Hagala work on a, can I just boil the crock pot, kosher it? Right.
Earthenware.
Right. You know, it's so funny. For our modern words, the same reason why whenever we're talking about kashrus, we use vessel, right? So we always go back to, you know, the earthenware, right? But yes, earthenware, pottery, klicheres, right? That's the word, pottery. If someone can give me a even more. What? Ceramic. Yes, ceramic is also part of it. Or porcelain. All these things are included within pottery or earthenware, right? So we're going to learn that earthenware is near impossible to kasher, right? So a crock pot, fortunately, in most cases, it is impossible to kasher, but we'll see. Okay, number two, we only have one oven and it's usually fleishigs. How do I kasher in order to cook dairy for Shavuos? Okay, we've talked about this a little, about cooking meat and dairy in the same oven, but let's say I don't want to deal with covering anything, right? I want to cook my cheesecake, I want to cook everything, and I'm not going to eat meat on Shavuos. It's just going to be dairy. Right, everyone should have meat on Shavuos. It's a good thing, okay? Yontif should have meat. But you want to cook dairy, right? You already prepared all your meat weeks in advance, right? Now you want to cook dairy. How do I kasher the oven? And for those of us lucky to have self-clean, great. Okay, nice. If you don't have self-clean, how do you do it, right? All right, so that's question two. And question three, a meat silicone spatula was used to remove a hot slice of pizza from the oven. What's the status of the spatula? Can the spatula be kashered, right? Rubber, plastic, pizza from the oven. What do you say? Anyone have one of those sitting in their trafe drawer at home? Have a few of those, right? Okay, fine. So we'll go through now a few of the sources to understand what can be kashered, and then we'll apply to the different appliances how to kasher. So let's start with the psukim. So in Bamidbar we're told, Ach es hazav, yes hakesef, yes hanechoshes, Esa barzel, v'esa v'dil, v'esa oferes. So all these different things, which essentially are metals, right? Gold, silver, copper, iron, tin, lead. So all of these, that when we acquired them from the Midyanim, when we acquired them from the non-Jews in the Midbar, so we had to kosher them. And not only did we have to dip them in the mikvah to do a tefillah on them to make them Jewish or kosher vessels, but we had to kosher them. We had to make that, we had to get rid of all the taste that was in them. The pasuk says, "Kol davar asher yavo be'esh," like what we said, anything that was used with heat, with fire, taviru be'esh. So now it has to pass through fire in order to get out the taste. The same way the taste goes in is the same way the taste comes out. And v'chol asher lo yavo be'esh taviru b'mayim. And that which didn't go through fire, but as Rashi learns, went through some other medium of heat, like water, like boiling or cooking. So that has to go through water to get out the taste, right? The same way taste goes in, the same way it goes out. Just like when we started this entire, you know, set of shirim, eventually you would get sick of the word ena ben yomo or ben yomo or blios or anything like that. The phrase kabolo kach polto, the same way it goes in, the same way it goes out. By tonight, you probably won't want to hear it anymore, but it'll be stuck. That's the concept. In, out, same. Okay. So there is an exception though, right? So far we've learned that all metals can essentially be koshered. Now, it depends how you kosher it, right? If it was in fire, through fire, water, through water, but they can be koshered. Metals, any metal, seemingly. But in Vayikra, we're told, uklicheres asher tvushal bo yishaber. So a klicheres, meaning earthenware vessel, right? You get strike, you know, two strikes here, earthenware and vessel. If that was used to cook, there, it's a concept over there talking about cooking kadshim, some of the korbanos, the chatas. But just let's take a general purview on this. If it was used to cook anything, yishaver, you have to break it. Meaning, there's no way to kasher earthenware, pottery, vessels, cookware. V'im b'kli nechoshes bushala, umarek v'shut of mayim. But if something was cooked in a metal, in a copper vessel, in a copper cookware, then you can kasher it, right? So we see straight out from the psukim, very, very clear, you cannot kasher kli cheres. You can't dip cheres, pottery, earthenware, into boiling water and kasher it that way. It doesn't work. Somehow the taste always remains so entrenched in it that nothing that you can do through boiling it is going to take out the taste, right? And a low-level heating of it also. Somehow it's very, I guess the word is porous, right? The Torah tells pottery is porous, it will take in the taste, and it does not leave. So in general, this includes porcelain, it includes, there's a whole discussion about china. As a general assumption, we say china can't be kashered. There are exceptions, and there are, you know, it depends on how it became treif and the like, so it's always worth the question, but just realize in the back of our minds, so bone china, which is not made, someone explained to me why it's called bone china, even though it's not made out of bone. It's not, right? Okay, good. Bone china is just...
What material is china?
That's a good question. Probably should have looked at the actual anatomy of china up beforehand. But we usually presume it to be of pottery. Is it made out of chol, like sand, like glass, and the like?
So basically also like any mug, right?
Yeah, many mugs have the same issue. You have to look it up because sometimes, well, porcelain, a lot of mugs might be porcelain, I think. But other mugs, trying to think, yeah, many of them are going to be ceramic. And ceramic is something that we would also treat as kli cheres. Right. So often mugs, right, that's a good example, right? We don't have to go all the way to our fancy china. Mugs often have this issue, right? How do you kasher a mug? So if it's actual ceramic or porcelain or actual kli cheres, then it's going to be a problem. I have right here a very, maybe I can share this later, a very nice guide, to kashering things that the CRC put out. So you have bone china, you have ceramic mugs, so all these things, it's you can't kasher it. Again, it's always worth the question, how it became not kosher might actually matter. But okay, so that's cheres, right? In general, if you have something, so like the crock pot, if it became treif, unlikely it can be kashered. So that's one. Now, more common, well, before that, in number three, we're told, and the Shulchan Aruch tells us, that echad kli eitz ve'echad kli even. Whether we're dealing with wood, whether we're dealing with stone, whether we're dealing with metal, all those can be kashered. So most kitchen appliances, or at least cookware, can be kashered. You have metal, you have wood, you have stone. The only problem would be if it's not perfectly clean and there's cracks that you can't get anything out of. So then it doesn't help to dunk in the water, boiling water, because you still have physical residue of cheese in there. For example, I have a grater, right? What happens if I have a meat grater and I grate cheese on it? So those little microblade graters, very hard to clean. If I'm sure I can clean it and get everything out so I could kosher it, but if I can't perfectly clean that, so it doesn't really help. So it's nice that I got out the taste, but there's physical residue on it, right? So if you have a cutting board that has these cracks and crevices, it's an old cutting board and it was used for one thing, so to just kosher it through boiling water, so that's nice, it took out the taste, but it didn't actually take out the physical residue. Just something to keep in mind.
Wood can be kashered?
Wood can be kashered.
Really?
Okay. Yeah. Wood can be kashered. So think about, I don't know how many wood, I guess you have wood salad bowls sometimes.
Mixing spoons.
Mixing spoons, right. Oh, mixing spoons, yeah. Yeah, mixing spoons, they can be kashered.
Isn't it super porous?
It is super porous. It's a good question, but I think the way Chazal understand it is it's super porous, but it's not porous enough to hold it back. Whereas something about cookware,
earthenware,
thank you, not only takes it in, but it doesn't let it come back out. That was Chazal's estimation of how to deal with it. Okay, so now, just to realize, we'll say outside in source 4. So when we say that cheres, and this will be important, when we say that earthenware can't be kashered, what we mean is it can't be kashered through hagala. Because when you dunk it in boiling water, it's porous enough to take in all the taste, but it doesn't give it back out. Technically, it could be incinerated out, but what happens when you put a earthenware mug into 900 degrees of fire? It's not going to survive that.
The glaze will run?
The glaze might run. It might actually ruin it. It might break it, or certainly the glaze might run. So Chazal say that whenever it might ruin the thing that you're trying to kosher, then you can't kosher it that way. Because what's going to happen? I'm going to put it, let's say my oven could go to 900 degrees. I have self-clean. So I have a mug or I have something that, or my crock pot. I want to kosher it. Well, Haggadah doesn't work, but technically if I incinerate the taste, it'll work. So let me put it in my self-clean oven. You're not going to put it on its highest temperature. Or you might not, right? 900 degrees is going to ruin my crock pot. Okay, you know, I'll do 700 degrees. It might survive that, but that's not going to accomplish the proper koshering method. And so Chazal said, you can't kosher it that way. The reason why this is important is because you can have many other things like, plastic or rubber. We'll see if you can kosher it. But let's say I can kosher it. And let's say I need to do Liban on it, right? I need to burn out the taste. It's not going to survive. Forget Liban at 900 degrees. It's not going to survive 500 degrees in the oven. So based on that, you wouldn't be able to kosher it. Anytime something could be kosher technically, but we'd be too worried to do it properly, so that won't be appropriate, right? It comes up glass. We're going to see, can you kosher glass? So most often, we don't kosher glass. We're going to see. Which means you can't kosher glass in boiling water. You can't do Haggadah on glass. Well, what if I could incinerate the taste? What if I could do Liban Gomer? Well, most glass is not going to survive 900 degrees. There's an exception that comes up very practically. Silver Spring. Glass stovetops. Right? It's the glass stovetop everywhere. Oh, God, it's a killer. But, yeah. What?
Is that because certain of your houses were built or whatever? That was like common?
I guess so. It's funny. Rev Reingold noted to me something about when they were building houses. That was the new, that was the fancy thing. So forget gas, you know. Electric was the big thing. So they installed all the electric stoves and there was no, there's no gas hookups in a lot of the kitchens. So nowadays, you don't have the old fashioned electric coils. You have electric glass tops, right? A pain when it comes to Pesach, koshering. So we hold you can't kosher glass as an Ashkenazi. So what am I going to do if I come into a house and it was owned by a non-Jew and they traifed it up? Or for Pesach, what am I going to do? So if you turn the burner up on its highest, the glass survives, right? That area where you're burning it onto its highest. You leave it on for a few minutes and that ostensibly koshered it enough for us to use it. Normally, we say you can't burn out taste on glass. It'll break. Well, we know this one will survive. So that's one of the exceptions that actually allows Liban Gomer, that complete incineration of the taste, that allows it to work, right? That doesn't work for the middle area, which doesn't reach that type of heat. So if you have a glass top stove, you shouldn't put things down on that middle area. If it's hot, you shouldn't put it down. And if hot, really hot food fell there, might have some issues of it being not kosher, at least part of it. So just realize that when you do have a glass stovetop, it's better not to put things in the middle areas because that can't be kosher, but the actual stovetop things, those are fine. How did we get there? Right, oh, because maybe something breaks. Good. So now let's talk about glass. By the way, if I'm going too fast through the materials, let me know. I just figured we get through the materials and then we'll apply it in certain cases. So how do we deal with glass? So the Ran in source 5, and this goes back hundreds of years now, Nira li lahatir kli zechuches. I think that it's okay to use glass from non-Jews. You get a glass from a non-Jew, he's used it with tray food. Afilu b'machnisan l'kiyam, even if they kept tray food in it for years. Tashia v'kashim ubliyasam mu'uta mikol ha'kelam. They're very smooth, they're very hard, they're not porous. They do not take in taste, says the Ran. The Ran says, they're very, first of all, they're smooth, so you don't have to deal with residue getting stuck in the cracks. And they're very hard, not porous, and nothing's going in. And he says, I found in the Avos Rabbi Nasan that zuchuches in bolin ve'in polten. They don't take in taste, they don't expel taste. Glass is essentially impervious to taste. That's what the Ran says. And the Shulchan Aruch in Source 7 for Sephardim says that's how we hold. A Sephardi would hold glass, does not take in taste, it does not expel taste, it doesn't need to be koshered, it can be used without kashering it, right? So that's for a Sephardi. Now, none of us are Sephardi here. So what does an Ashkenazi hold? So Ashkenazim go based on source 6, based on the Mordechai, citing Rabbi Yechiel. So he says over here in the second line, Dehave kikli cheres, he thinks glass is like earthenware. Ho tchilas b'riyasan minachol. How do you make glass? Where does it originate from? That at least I know. Sand, right? It originates from sand, earth. So he says we should treat glass like cheres. And if we're going to treat glass like earthenware, that means just like earthenware can't be kashered, glass can't be kashered, right? So the Raman source 7 says, we're machmir, as Ashkenazim, that we don't think you can kasher glass. Okay, so Ashkenazim technically don't kasher glass. To be fair, there's another place where the Raman doesn't comment on the Shulchan Aruch, so it sounds like he does think sometimes you can kasher glass. So there's a range of opinions out there, which essentially range from agreeing with the Sephardim that, yeah, it's okay to kasher glass, to the other extreme that glass can't be koshered and it's trafed, to the middle view, which, well, it can be trafed up, but it can also be koshered, okay? Generally, as Ashkenazim, we hold that we don't kosher glass, but in certain circumstances, we do, right? So, for example, with the stovetop, or we'll talk about when we get to specific cases, but that's, again, something to think about. We generally don't kosher glass. So if I'm buying from a non-Jew used cookware, so you shouldn't buy something that has glass, right? Because we can't kosher that. If something happens in your kitchen that you trafed up glass, that's worth a call because there are certain circumstances where we might allow it, but just realize that's the general minhag by Ashkenazim. Yeah.
Kosher microwaves has a glass.
Yeah, it has a glass thing. Yeah, that's troublesome, right? That's okay. We'll talk about microwaves in 1 minute. Let's just talk about the last material, and then we'll talk about the actual appliances where all these materials are found, and that is rubber. How do we deal with rubber? So Rav Moshe addresses this, and he says in source Ace, Udvar kli me rubber. Right, and that's how you spell rubber in Hebrew. I'm sure nowadays there's actual word for rubber in Hebrew, but Rav Moshe says rubber. Im mahani hagala. He says, can you do hagala? Can you boil out the taste of rubber? So he says, it used to be rubber was made from trees. And if rubber is made from trees, well, wood you can kosher, so you can kosher rubber. But then he says, most rubbers nowadays are actually made out of synthetic materials. I think he has another nice word for that. Yes, mitarovis minim kimiyim, meaning chemical compounds. So, at least I can understand the Hebrew. So I had to look this one up. Most silicone rubbers today... So natural rubber is more commonly recognized as latex and comes directly from rubber trees, okay? But if it's not a natural rubber, so then very often it's made and called a synthetic polymer, and it's made from a number of things like carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, silicone. This is all Chinese to me. But the point is it's complex, involves many stages, and it's made from something that is not natural. So can I kosher that? I don't know how chemical compounds work. I don't know. The Torah is not telling me if taste goes in or out of rubber. Right? Rubber trees probably exist in the time of the Torah, but certainly silicone spatulas didn't. So how do we deal with rubber? So it's a machlokas. Really, the question is, when the Torah said you can't kasher kli cheres, earthenware, did it mean just that or anything like it? So that's basically, was that the one exception, or was that the example for all the exceptions that you can't kosher? So, as Ashkenazim, I believe the general approach is that in Israel, they're mekel, and they kosher plastic. In America, we usually hold like Rav Moshe, and plastic shouldn't be koshered. Again, there will be exceptions, and based on how much of a loss it is, like what we're talking about, I didn't actually, well, no, a silicone spatula, I looked it up, they range from $3 to, let's say, $20. That's from like Walmart or Amazon. If you're an actual professional cook, I can't tell you. You just might not be using a silicone spatula. But that's something that, depending on the person, is probably not that expensive, a $4 spatula if you trafed it up. So, but anyway, that's just a discussion about rubber. We generally try not to kosher rubber. All right, so I think, is that all the materials? Same materials that I would have forgotten that anyone's thinking about. Great, we covered all of them. So, is Teflon a material? Or that's just a type?
It's a coating.
Good. Okay, so we'll... good, so you convinced me. We'll talk... What?
Did we not talk about plastic?
Plastic and rubber. Plastic and rubber would be
plastic
the...
Plastic and rubber are considered the same thing?
Yeah.
I mean, they're synthetic petroleum-based products, right?
Okay, yeah.
See, that sounded much smarter than how I said it. Okay.
Are there any specific, like, Menhagim or opinions in Shomrei, like from Rav Einamar?
When it comes to glass?
Glass, rubbers, silicone, right?
Maybe don't ask me about glass. generally, what we've said until now is I believe the Mahalich. I know Rabbi Rosenbaum told me that there would be very few cases where we would be mako on glass, right? Yeah. Well, let's talk about the appliances, and maybe that'll come up. But as far as rubber and no, I think it would follow the regular OU or CRC. I was just looking to try to see what they exactly say on rubber, if they had a specific comment over here. But no, yeah, rubber. So, oh, interesting. So when it comes to rubber, the CRC is willing to kosher it if there are no cracks. Okay, so good. When it comes to rubber, there's definitely a discussion, which is why it's not something you automatically throw out. That's what the CRC says. I don't know what the OU... but okay, good.
There's a lot of serving utensils that will be metal but have like a rubber handle. So
right.
You don't burn yourself when you're holding it.
Right. So most of the time for an Ashkenazi, as long as nothing got on the rubber itself, we'd be lenient to allow koshering that. Right? If you know something spilled directly on that, then that's already the question. But if it's just on the handle, even to a pot, for an Ashkenazi we'd usually say you can kosher that part. You can cash to the pot and just pour boiling water on the rubber part. Okay, so let's go through some specific cases. Let's just talk about the common kitchen appliances now, okay? Ovens. So ovens, right, that was our first question that we started off with. Can I and how do I kosher my oven to cook dairy? Or just I moved into a house that's treif, or before Pesach or the like. Okay, so the way to do it is have a self-clean oven. Turn on self-clean, realize self-clean, self-steam. They self-clean ovens can have a steam clean. That does not work. That does not kosher an oven. It has to be with the regular self-clean. So you turn on the self-clean, you don't even have to wait 24 hours. It doesn't even have to be clean because it incinerates everything within, right? So that is self-clean. Now, if you're unfortunate not to have self-clean, you know, like until this year, I never had a self-clean. It just takes a lot of easy off scrubbing and a lot of hard work. So if you don't have self-clean, which gets to 900 degrees, something like that, which incinerates, that's Liban Gomor. So then what you have to do is you have to wait 24 hours since the last use. You have to scrub out all the residue and then turn on the oven to 500, 550, whatever your oven goes up to for an hour. The reason why you should wait 24 hours is because it's not incinerating the same way that high-level Liban does, right? It's pulling out the taste and getting rid of it. So you have to wait 24 hours since the last time and make sure it's clean. You know, obviously any residue, hopefully it will also burn away. But you should get out what you can. Yeah.
Now, sometimes self-clean can break an oven. Like I know a lot of people have that happen even with new.
Right.
So is somebody, if they have a self-clean oven, are they obligated to use that for Pesach or other times? Or is it okay for them not to use it? Like,
yeah, I've heard it breaks a lot of ovens too.
Mm-hmm.
I just learned that.
It breaks ovens. You gotta wonder why they're putting it on. Well, that's because didn't you cover your?
Yeah. Right. Everyone like all like the mom groups. Everyone's like, do we do the self clean? Everyone's like, no, it breaks.
Uh huh.
So and in a lot of the koshering guides, they'll say do it far enough in advance that if it breaks, you get it fixed with enough time. So is one obligated to do that since there's a risk, or is it okay just to say, look, I have self clean, but I'm not gonna use it. I'm just gonna do the other way.
It's a good question. I don't know. The percentages, right? No, it's a totally different level of cleaning. When it comes to Pesach, more likely we would say you should do Liban Gomer. But I'll reserve judgment for that right now. I can get back to you. But it's my understanding. It's a good question. I never really thought about this as far as might it actually break. I'll tell you, if you're switching between meat and dairy and your oven isn't treif, so then it's for sure what to rely on. Wait 24 hours, clean it, and then put it on 500 for an hour. If you're dealing with an oven that's actually treif because you got it from a non-Jew, or because something crazy happened in your oven and it actually became treif, or maybe before Pesach would be a discussion, but if you're just going from meat to dairy or dairy to meat, so that would be okay not to use a self-clean.
Is there any bitty edits for less than 24 hours and less than an hour? I feel like we read that in like the
comments. Meaning, let's say it's minutes before Pesach, or minutes before the Zman on Pesach when it's cutting off, right?
And I feel like my kids are like screaming for something, like a dairy something for the oven.
Right. So the good news is that for most cases, you can do covered and
right.
you're probably okay.
Right.
Right, it's hard. I'm not sure. I know of certain cases, but I'm not sure if that arrives at that case. Although
one of like our kosher books we read, right, that it's like some, if you really have, I don't know what it was, like a long time ago, or what it
could be. If you want, I can get back to you to tell you if that specific case would arise to the need of what we call tzarech gadol, a great need. You know what? For anyone who has screaming children waiting for dinner, it might be. But I can get back to you. I know in other extreme circumstances, like before Pesach and the like, there are things to talk about.
Well, you saw someone have an oven that was like the shape of a single oven, but two drawers.
Oh, interesting.
Leave it have that, which is like one oven, but a meat and milk.
Well, the way they work, it ventilates out, so it doesn't ventilate into each other, I believe.
So would you be able to use that? You'd be able to use that meanwhile?
It's two separate ovens, just one stacked on top of the other, right?
Yeah, that's what it looks like. It's too many.
Yeah, I think that they make these ovens specifically not to ventilate in one to the other, I believe. I can't speak towards actual ovens, but...
Is it lower?
It's not one oven. It's not one oven with two levels. It's two separate ovens stacked.
Two separate ovens stacked.
Right. It would be the same thing.
Right.
Save space. Okay. So that's ovens.
Question for self-clean.
Yeah.
Some people are talking about the ovens that break from self-clean. So some people are saying not to do the full cycle. Because it goes for, I think, like 4 hours.
There's different levels. There's like a quick, like when you do the self-clean, at least on mine, there's like quick, regular, then like longer one. There's like three levels.
Uh-huh. So
is that what you're talking about, the different levels? Or
I don't know.
I saw on mine there are different levels. I don't know what temperature each level gets up to and for how long to be able to say yes or no to those. Mm-hmm. I'm sure, Mr. Shem, I can look online to see what each level gets up to, depending on how hot it would get. If it creates a certain heat within the temperature and of the walls, then maybe. It just depends if it's getting there or not. So, yeah.
I think my oven, it's never given me an option. Like, it's just one setting. So, if I don't, if it's just one setting.
Yeah, we trust that they, yeah.
But I wouldn't be able to stop it, like, halfway through because I wouldn't know how hot it gets.
I assume not. Now, some of the self-clean ovens go through a cycle, and part of it is a cooling down cycle. So, that's part of the time that's put in there. But that's probably not the part that's breaking the oven. So I'm not sure. I'd have to look into the actual how each oven works.
Like it defaults to one setting, but then, or like at least on mine, it defaults something, but then
I can press less time. Yeah, right. So I don't know how they work. So that's something to definitely check into to see if there's a difference in the heat and the length of time. What temperature the entire oven and the walls are getting to when you do the different cycles. Okay. Great. Let's get to dishwasher in a second just because that's the bigger, microwave, right? Microwave. How do I kosher a microwave? So microwave, there are a few issues. One is that it's dirty. So it needs to be cleaned perfectly, not used for 24 hours because the way I'm going to kosher it is with boiling water. So I should wait 24 hours since last use, perfectly clean it because the boiling water doesn't get rid of residue, perfectly clean. It would be ideal to spray some, cleaning material on the sides when you're cleaning it that goes into the vent. That way, if there's any residue right behind the vent, it basically makes it gross and inedible. So you don't deal with any, as we've talked about in the ovens, the creating of the steam that then takes taste from food into your food, right? So clean it well, maybe spray like a caustic material into the sides that you're cleaning it with. Not caustic, like poisonous, but whatever you're using to clean. And then you can put in a cup of water, preferably in a cup that hasn't been used in 24 hours itself. Put in a cup of water, put it on long enough that it boils over and steams the entire microwave. I honestly, I haven't done it in recent memory, so I don't know how long that practically will take. But it takes, you know, definitely a few minutes. I don't know, 5 minutes? Ten minutes it would take? Okay, so practically it'll take 10 minutes. I mean, it has to boil over, boiling steam everywhere, and afterwards you just wipe the entire thing out. So, again, with glass, we generally do not, we don't kasher glass. So, let's say you trafed it up, like you used the wrong food with it. So, we would probably, in some, you know, again, it's always worth a question. We'd probably say you have to get a new glass plate. You can get them for $20 for most of the microwaves. That being said, if you're going between meat and dairy for whatever reason, or, you know, there are other mitigating factors, you could do Hagalah on the plate, right? You could put it in the boiling water, and that might help. So there are different circumstances where we would be lenient. So it's definitely worth the call. I'll tell you two times it might be that we're lenient. Don't take this as now the general rule, but just to realize that one would be if you're just going between meat and dairy and nothing was trafed, right? Now you just want to use this for dairy, so I'm going to kasher my microwave to use with dairy. The other, and this is the one I don't want everyone jumping on, keeping, you know, in their back pocket. This is just to realize that's why you call, because we generally don't kasher glass. But in this case, if I hadn't used my microwave for 24 hours before I trafed it with the opposite food, so we might let you kasher glass, right? Imagine yesterday, early morning, I used it for dairy, and tonight I used it for meat. And there was no residue when I used it for meat, so I just trafed it up. I trafed up in a way that I had meat going into Eina Ben Yomo dairy. So that's not really mixing meat and dairy, that's mixing meat with, well, old dairy that doesn't carry a good taste anymore. Okay, that's just the logic behind it. That's called heterabala. It took in technically permissible taste. I'm just saying that to realize that there are cases where you could kasher the microwave. Many of them, you know, will help. So you don't always have to throw out your glass plate. Okay, fine.
I think a fairly common question on microwave is if you're at a hotel or at a rental house somewhere.
Right.
You know, you want to use the microwave for that day, 2 days, however long you're there. Could you kasher and just remove the plate and just use the microwave without the actual glass plate in there?
Yeah, you could do that. I mean, I can't tell you the safety as using a microwave without the glass plate. I have no clue. But yes, you could do that.
It's just as safe as putting a pizza box in the oven.
Good. You could probably wrap it also in plastic. That would also be appropriate. And technically, if you wrap all your food in plastic, in double covering, you could put it in with the glass plate. You're just worried about there being a contact of some medium between your food or your plate with the glass that's, you know, will take out the taste.
Right.
So take it out or wrap your food in these rental places. But
just
yeah,
cardboard box to, like, you know, cut.
Yeah,
I've used plenty of microwaves without the glass plate. I've never had any.
Good. So that's the solution. But at home, you probably want a glass plate in general. Okay, right? I assume. Okay, glass stovetops we talk about. Turn it to its highest setting. You shouldn't use the middle areas that don't actually get hot when you turn on the glass plate. Okay. By the way, don't turn all of them on the highest setting at the same time. I'm pretty sure I've been told that's a recipe to actually crack the glass. Even though you'll say I've cooked on all four burners at the same time, something having to do with the dispersion of heat when you actually have a pot on top of it. Wow. I've never done it, but I've been told maybe don't do all four at the same time. Okay, and let's see, any other big things that come up in the oven? Okay, dishwashers. It's not simple to kasher them. They're made out of many different materials. The porcelain ones, no. Nowadays, most of the time, it's made out of rubber or metals or the like. So the general route that I think Rav Einemar, this is Rav Einemar's opinion, and Ray Rosenbaum holds this, you can kasher it by running it on its cycle, but you have to get new racks. You'd have to, like, if you moved into a house and if it was a trafe dishwasher, you'd have to get new racks. I don't know how much racks cost, but I'm told they cost just as much as getting a new dishwasher. I don't know if that's true. Yeah, it's pretty bad. Okay. Yeah, sorry. Dishwashers aren't so simple. Also, dishwashers really contain a lot of old residue food and mamashas. I don't know if that they still taste good or not, you know, once it's been run through the cycle with the water and the soap, but just realize because it's rubber and other factors, we generally don't kasher a microwave unless you replace the dishwasher.
You said microwave.
Dishwasher. I'm sorry. No, microwaves are good. We're good on microwaves. Okay. Trying to think if there's anything else. The last one. This is the last one. Teflon pans. Teflon pans are nonstick pans that you didn't use with oil. So then there's no medium that's transferring. So if there's no medium like water, so the same way it goes in is the same way it goes out, which means it now requires Liban Gamor, the highest koshering. There's no water, so I can't kosher it through water or oil, which would the same idea. Teflon pan is not going to survive a self-clean oven. Most pans will not survive that. Again, I'm just raising that to for what? More importantly, yes. So just realize again, if that were to happen, always worth the call, because the same way by the microwave, there was a reason why it might be okay. There are certain circumstances where the Teflon pan, even though it took in only through heat, it might in certain cases suffice a lower level koshering process. That's just something to keep in mind. So you ruin your Teflon pan, don't throw it straight into the garbage. That's always good, worth a question. Okay, so let's just go back to our original questions and then take some more if anyone has. So crock pot, can I kosher a crock pot? Unfortunately not. Okay, I only have one oven and it's usually fleishigs. It's not treif, I just wanna kosher it in order to use it for dairy. So you can put it on self-clean. We have to look into the different levels of self-clean. That might be worth looking into. So Ruben, we'll be in touch. If you don't have self-clean, and certainly if you're worried about self-clean enough that you've never used it before, so then to go from meat to dairy, not trafed it, but from meat to dairy, if you're really that worried and you've never done self-clean, you could probably, you could wait 24 hours, clean it out, and put it on 500, 550 for an hour. And the last one, a silicone spatula was used to remove a hot slice of pizza from the oven. What's the status of the spatula? Can it be koshered? So had it taken a taste? Through what medium?
Direct.
Direct medium, meaning no water in between. So that would require Liban, which means incinerating and burning. There are very few spatulas that will survive that. Now, there might be other leniencies, but coupled with the fact that generally we don't kosher rubber, so you'd probably throw out the spatula in this case.
What if it didn't touch the actual pizza, it just touched the pan? Or, I mean, the thing that's holding the pizza. Or touched the dough or something like that. Would that...
Oh, interesting. So, if it didn't touch the actual pizza, and it just touched, let's say it was... You pulled out, there was foil underneath, you pulled it out, and there was no liquid, no oil, nothing between the piece of foil and your spatula. So then we would probably say there was no transfer of taste, because what caused anything? If it touched the actual dough, there might... It's a good question. One second, if it touched the actual dough, do we say that part is dairy that's transferring the taste? Likely yes, but I'd have to get back to you on that. Okay? All right, so that covers everything here. Again, like normal, I don't want to keep everyone, so we'll end here, but if anyone has any questions to ask or follow up, so you can go on.
Okay.
Yeah, please.
Microwave, that's okay. Plenty to kosher to make a dairy. Okay. Realize that the plate might be a problem.
Uh-huh.
So it wasn't trafe. It's just like when we moved in, there was a built-in microwave, so now we have an extra one and just like shuffling things around.
Wait, meaning you have an extra one shuffle and...
Yeah, we have an extra one from like that we used for me. We were using our dairy one and decided...
And then you decided...
One for dairy.
Right, so if you've been using it probably in that case, yeah, we'd say you can kosher it through a gullah.
That
in this case,
like
it means getting a large enough pot that you can dunk it into a boiling pot of water, rolling boil, putting it in. You can do it in pieces. It doesn't all have to be like when you do tefillas kalim. It has to be all at once. For Haggadah, you can do different pieces as long as you get every part.
You do like half of it and then flip it over?
Yeah, and then flip it. As long as you're sure it got that middle area. And then you could throw it, then quickly put in cold water. If you don't, it doesn't ruin it. But yeah, that's how you do it. Okay, I'm just trying. You used it for fleish previously, and then at some point you used it for dairy.
Well,
yeah,
we haven't used it yet for dairy.
Oh, but you haven't used it yet for dairy.
No,
oh.
I haven't actually.
Oh, yeah. I think that would be.
So you first do haggadah on the plate, and then you do the boiling water to kosher the microwave itself.
Yeah. I mean, if you did it with the plate, it's ain't a ben yomo, but I would suggest koshering the plate before you do that. You could probably, I don't know if you kosher with or without the plate. I mean, without it. I don't know if it works if it doesn't go around. David's telling me it works without the plate. But yeah.
It's not ideal, but it does work.
It does work.
I think it's just to dissipate the power from the microwave, right? Because otherwise microwave is just putting the energy in one spot. That one spot will get superheated and the surrounding areas will still be cold.
Oh. Right, so heat makes everything go around.
So it might not be as effective. It might take much longer to kosher. So maybe kosher the plate and then.
By
tradition,
in the middle of nowhere, tastes fine.
Right, because that's a more of a liquid, right?
So that's not what you need.
Okay. All right. Great. Thank you, everyone.